Welcome to Actors 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith, and today we have a multi-award winning actress. Her name is Vida Ghaffari. There's a lot I can say about her, but why don't we let her say it? Let's get her on the phone and let's see what she has to offer you. And here we go.
Hello?
Hello, Vida. It's Johnny with Actors 2020 Podcast. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Thank you so much for being on my show. There's so much about you. There's no way we're going to get it in 30 minutes. So we're just going to have to pick and choose here.
Okay, sure. I think I'm a fast talker, but whatever you think. And great voice, by the way. As someone that does voiceover from one to another, great voice. And thank you for the interview.
Wow, thank you. Wow. So we definitely want to touch on how early on your career you were maybe typecast, maybe known as a utility character, to having now agents, managers, publicists, etc. But what I find fascinating is that your family name has a street named after it in Tehran.
Yes.
That's impressive. Talk about that.
There was a revolution and everything became ultra religious. So everything kind of changed names to very religious names, but my family street is one of the things that still remains from before. It's very rare. I would like to go visit someday. It's right in the center of Tehran, and unfortunately I've never been, but I still have family that lives there.
Wow, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm always interested in where people like get their training, like how they start out. I'm guessing, but maybe you'll confirm this, because you were born in Washington, D.C., and you kind of went into journalism, and you had access to amazing studios, cameras. You got to get in there and do bits and play characters. Were you getting paid for that, or was that intern? How'd you get that experience?
I had like one or two internships, but I was usually a paid journalist. I got a lot of grants, all sorts of jobs that were actually paid journalism jobs.
That's a great foundation for your training to come to Los Angeles and start acting.
Yes, I've been a journalist here too, so it's been an interesting road.
What did you do to get your SAG card?
So back in the day, you can join SAG if you're already a member of AFTRA. So I booked a role on a Comedy Central show, Mind of Mencia.
You played the Iraqi wife, right?
Yes, yes, exactly. I got my AFTRA card, and then I think less than a year later, this is before the unions merged, I then got my SAG card. Even though I played an Iraqi wife, I worked with a great group of Iranian actors that I know to this day. So it's been an interesting journey. You know, I applaud the work you do. I know it certainly isn't easy having people come on the show, doing your research. It's a lot of work. I was there, so, you know, I tip my hat to you.
I love it, though. I know you're into a lot of yoga and stuff right now, but where did you start your martial arts training? How did you learn martial arts?
You know, I took kickboxing classes at a local place by me. I wanted to train with Grandmaster Eric Lee, but he said he was retired. So I've just taken classes locally, but unfortunately, I have terrible tendonitis on my right shoulder. So I've kind of put the kibosh on that, and for now, I've gone back to yoga and Pilates. Maybe I should get my certification in one of those, but it's been a rough road because I've been wanting to get back into kickboxing. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, but learning all those moves, didn't it help you like on movies where you have a stunt? Because you know camera has no depth perception and there's no reason for anyone to ever get hurt. Didn't you get hurt on a set as well?
I got hurt on one set, but luckily I was working with Mel Novak, and he's, you know, a legendary actor and, you know, martial artist and an athlete himself. And he was in Bruce Lee's Game of Death and An Eye for an Eye opposite Chuck Norris. And I have to tell you, he kind of helped me like not injure myself so much. You know, people like him, they're true professionals. So it's not just about the acting. They'll also tell you what looks good on camera without you breaking your back, literally.
USA Martial Arts Hall of Fame. You're in it.
Yes, I'm the first Iranian person too.
I love martial arts.
It was a wonderful experience. They're great people that run that organization.
You're a multi-award winning actress. You've probably done countless red carpets. Where do you actually keep your awards at your house? Do you have a mantle or do you have a bookshelf? Where do you put them all?
You know, this is going to sound so contrived, but I used to hang them, but now there's not much room to hang them. And I learned an interesting tip from one of your guests recently, Harley Charlie Wallen, who I've had the honor of working with, and he said that he doesn't like to display his awards because it makes him not work as hard. So he doesn't display his awards. He just keeps them in boxes. I don't really keep mine in boxes, but I haven't been able to hang everything.
That's pretty cool. There's too many to mention, but the one that fascinates me is the Lucky Film Festival. You got Best Voiceover.
Yes, that was a wonderful ceremony put together by this really interesting character. Talk about international. This guy is an amazing filmmaker. His name is Roman Simon. I had the honor of working on his film, Hybristophilia. It starred Quentin Aaron from The Blind Side. And that was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And after that, I was nominated for an award. And it was really a tremendous honor to be bestowed an award by him in his festival because he's a filmmaker as well. So I received my voiceover award because I'm recurring on XM Satellite Radio's Suspense Show, which is precursor based on the original Suspense Show of Rod Sterling's Twilight Zone. So first it was a Suspense Show, then that morphed into the Twilight Zone. I mean, there's no more Rod Sterling, but that was a wonderful experience. And it's at Melrose Music at Raleigh Studios where they record, which is a wonderful studio. And the guy who puts it together, John Aldisek, is amazing. He's a very old school person and he writes it all himself. And it's like 1940s radio plays.
Do you play characters?
I've voiced different roles in that. Yeah. There was a Christmas episode I was on. There was another episode I worked with Mr. Novak. I was like a femme fatale. And he was a gumshoe detective type. There's another one I work on where I'm a military person and I'm stationed in some very cold, hostile territory. So it's been a great experience working on the Suspense Show.
That's kind of cool. So voiceover acting, you come in and you're playing a character as an actor, but then sometimes you have to go back and you have to do looping, which is ADR, additional dialogue recording. So I noticed you did that on RoboCop in 2014, and in 2019, RoboWoman. It's like a precursor, I guess.
Yeah, I thought that was a very interesting experience. I think when you're in the game, sometimes things come full circle. So I did do ADR for Robo Woman. It's funny, in voiceover, people view it a certain way, but I view it as a great way to do different characters in a minimal period of time. One of the highest paid things in voiceover, I was paid, in my opinion, I was paid very handsomely for it. So I've also done it for Bones. I used to do it a lot when I was first starting out for indie films. And it's a great training because you have to do, it's a lot of improv. You kind of have to do the voices on the spot to match the looping. And there's three beeps and then you do your voiceover after the beeps. And it's an interesting array of beeps that you do your voiceover to. And you know, the people that are directing you, they're ADR directors. So they're not like typical directors. They have a very quick deadline. It's not like you're filming a feature film where you have so much time to do one take over and over and over again. You're doing things fast and quick. And I did them in Farsi. So that was an interesting experience. Oh. Doing it in another language, voicing different characters. It was wonderful, almost surreal, especially when you're on, you know, like the Fox lot, or if you're working on a feature film, it's a great experience.
Yeah, it's got to go. It's like karaoke acting. 3, 2, 1, you're on.
Yes, it is like karaoke.
You're responsible. Hey, speaking of Farsi, can you say something in Farsi just so I can hear the dialect?
Sure. Salam. خیلی خوشحالم که رو برنامه Actors 2020 podcast هستم. I said that good morning. I am very excited to be guesting on the Actors 2020 podcast.
That's cool. Yeah, I used to manage an apartment building in Beverly Hills. So my kids went to Beverly Hills High and they came from Texas, went there. And one of them, it was a culture shock for. And the other one, he just like blended right in. Like all their friends were Persian.
Exactly.
You did a documentary or something about that, right?
I did a documentary about that. And so I wonder if I was to do the documentary about the real Shahs today, what it would be now as opposed to then. I think back then there was a big backlash in our community about a certain reality show, The Shahs of Sunset. And I think a lot of people wanted to say, hey, we're not all just bougie materialistic people. We're, you know, professionals, we're artists, we're entrepreneurs. This is another side of our culture. So I think that was the idea behind working on that one.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Got it. You have such an array of stuff. So let's get to the horror. You're known as the Persian Linda Blair.
Yes, because I did a film that was an exorcism film called Holy Terror, and it did very well internationally. It ended up number 11 on Amazon UK Prime, and it did very well. Believe it or not, Middle Eastern people are big horror fans. So even, you know, people in Iran and other Middle Eastern countries reached out to me via social media after that one. So that was a tremendous experience, and I got got to once again work with Mr. Novak and Christine DeBell from The Big Brawl and Meatballs. Just great actors on that one as well. And I just play a very troubled young woman without giving too much detail. But it was an exorcism film, which is a popular genre of itself in horror. I did my first shark movie. I did L.A. Shark Attack.
Los Angeles Shark Attack.
Yeah.
When is that coming out? Can you tell us anything about it, or you can't give anything away?
I can give little details. So it's Dustin Ferguson is an amazing filmmaker. He's a pretty young guy, and he's done at least 70 films. And
wow.
He is a true movie lover, a true movie fan. And I have to say, between him and my wonderful representation, Joe Williamson, they could have their own Trivial Pursuit or Jeopardy based on movies. Those fellows know so much about movies. So it's great to work with people that have such a great knowledge of film. But the film will premiere this November. I don't know where yet, but I get to work with a great cast. I get to work with Brink Stevens from Slumber Party Massacre. Once again, Mr. Novak, the lovely Donna Lee Heising from Samurai Cop 2 Deadly Vengeance, Maria Olson from Paranormal Activity 3. It's just a great team of horror, like some great screen queens. So it was a real honor working on that one. And Dustin had the interesting idea of making it the POV of the sharks, how we're invading their territory. Without giving too much away, there's like an evil real estate developer man, and he wants to build everything up. And it's the POV of the sharks, which I thought was an interesting take. Dustin's a very clever, smart, artistic guy. So I thought that was an interesting approach. I also did two more of his horror films recently. In addition to doing Robo-Woman, which you mentioned, I did Moon of the Blood Beast, which premiered on WGUD-TV on After Hours Cinema, hosted by Lee Turner. And I also did my first franchise film, Meat Hook Massacre, The Final Chapter, which aired, premiered on the Monster Channel, and it was hosted by Slash Cooper. And that film I got so much interest in because people really love their franchise films. Apparently they're doing more chapters. It really wasn't the final chapter.
That's the final chapter. They can't bring it back.
Bubba, I guess the character, rises from the grave and comes back.
Of course.
So there's such a demand for it. So those films are so, so popular. But just keeping busy with that. And I also had the premiere of my film. I would have loved to have had you there had I known you. We had the premiere for Eternal Code that was featured twice in Variety at the Chinese.
That's doing really well.
It's such an interesting story. And Harley is such an amazing filmmaker. And it's a testament to him and his talent. He read an article about an Italian scientist/doctor that wanted to do head transplant surgery. And apparently it worked on primates. And they wanted to do it on people. And it was a very, very interesting article. And he took that article and he thought of the social ramifications, the socioeconomic ramifications. And it's very interesting, what somebody could do, given that they could put their head on somebody else's body or put their body on somebody else's head. Like, it shows like the evil that people can do as opposed to the good that people can do. It was almost like this movie was so interesting. It was a sci-fi thriller. It was a cautionary tale. For me, it was very interesting because it was my first role where I play a scientist. My dad was a scientist in his field, and in Persian culture, being a scientist is like being Michael Jordan. And he was a mathematician too. I come from a culture where that's very revered, and it was the first time I played a scientist. So people in the Persian community, well-known people, as well as media people, took an interest in me playing a role like that because, like I said, scientists are very well recognized. So that was an interesting nod to my heritage, to the family business. I come from a family of educators, unfortunately not like most Persians that are so good in business. That was a great experience. You well know, living in Beverly Hills. So that was a great experience. And I've just gotten so much outreach, not just from the Persian community, from all sorts of things. And we got great coverage in Variety. Joe Williamson, once again, I tip my hat to him, did a great job with it. And Harley is a true talent who you've brought on your show. And we had great turnout. We had Oscar nominee Terry Moore. We had Emmy winner Kim Estes, Emmy nominee Naomi Grossman from American Horror Story. It was just a great experience, and it was great to play, a very empowered woman. I feel like Harley gave me a gift in that after that I played scientists a couple more times, and I will most likely be playing scientists again. I got a lot of use out of a lab jacket that I've had as an actor.
That's kind of cool. So that's where you're at now. But how did you go from playing those typecast utility characters to where you are now? Is it just like, I'm not doing that anymore? Or do you surround yourself with a team? Because it's hard to do it yourself. Like, how did you make that transition?
Agreed. I believe it's a little bit of both. I think it's being tired of, you know, going on the 405 for small auditions. And usually, you know, when you're playing a Middle Eastern woman, those lines get reduced. Oftentimes they've gotten cut because those kinds of women are not known to speak much. They're supposed to be very demure women. So I think for me, that was the experience I had. I went to going from these roles to going to bigger parts and also having great representation like Joe that constantly pushes for me and says, you know, why are you subjecting yourself to these roles when it doesn't really affect the plot point oftentimes, those roles. They're great and everything. I can do those dialects. I used to joke that I had a trunk full of different headscarves to wear at auditions. But one of my last roles that I played Middle Eastern, I was in a burqa, and it was very controversial, the nature of the role. And right. It was, you know, these things, when they air, but then they don't re-air oftentimes. If things happen politically and it's very controversial and they don't want to, I believe the network censors don't want to rock the boat and air stuff multiple times, which would be nice as an actor because it would be, you know, more residual checks. And you know,
yeah, more money.
Yeah, you get to see your work. And then more, with more money, of course, comes more benefits. I come from a very practical family of academics. So I'm always about the benefits. Healthcare is important these days. But going back to Eternal Code, if I may, it's going to be released on a DVD at Target, Walmart, Best Buy, and it's already on VOD on a lot of different outlets right now. Fandango Now, Vimeo, it's on Amazon Prime. It's on all sorts of different VODs right now, videos on demand right now. And I'm looking forward to the DVD release. It's an exciting time for that film. And I was very grateful to work on it.
You know, I noticed you saw you like in other interviews, and a lot of actors, I'll say, oh, that movie I did. Oh, I'm so embarrassed. Everything you've done, you seem to be super proud of.
You know, I am. There's always a few things in there that a person's not thrilled with or how something ended up, you know, like I said, playing those Middle Eastern roles. But I think it's all great experience. And, you know, it's good to do that. And I'd be happy to play a Middle Eastern role again. I have nothing against being Middle Eastern. I'm very proud of my heritage. And I think it's the doors have opened more. I think those stock characters are probably a thing of the past. There's a lot more diversity in roles. And I think a lot of times nowadays, those women aren't necessarily always covered. And if they are, you know, if it's a compelling role and it adds something and it's part of the plot and it's part of the storyline, you know, I'd be happy to do it.
So what does it take to get you to do a role?
I think as an artist, it's more about reading the script. I mean, of course, the money's nice. What's the saying from that movie, The Big Chill, where Jeff Goldblum says, friendship is the bread of life, but the money is the honey. I mean, the money is always a nice benefit, but I think for me, it's about the character. I played a role in a film called Nation's Fire, and it was a great cast. It was 2-time Oscar nominee Bruce Dern, Emmy winner Gil Bellows, UFC fighter Chuck Liddell, Kristen Renton from Sons of Anarchy. That was one of the first roles I had that I wasn't Middle Eastern. I played like a school security guard that was caught her name was Joan, and she was caught in a really, really tenuous situation. So I really like roles like that, where it's, you know, like an every woman that's struggling to get out of a bad situation. And, you know, not to mention working with great actors like that. That was such an amazing, amazing experience. For me, I like to look at the role and I like to see who else is cast in the film. You know, I had such a wonderful experience working with Richard Tyson. It's great working with these actors. A person learns so much from them. I've always been a big fan of his work. So it was a surreal experience to work with him. 3 o'clock High is one of my favorite films.
Yes, and, I love that movie.
Yes, and he was amazing as Buddy Ravel. I love There's Something About Mary, where he was the detective. I mean, I'm just such a fan of his, so I was totally fangirling him. On set, I called him Buddy Ravel, and he was very surprised and impressed that I was, and I don't think he should be. I think I just caught him off guard, but yeah, for me, it's about the role. Like, I'm in this film called Realm of Shadows. It's going to probably shoot later this fall. I was just cast, and I get to work opposite legendary actor Tony Todd from the Candyman and Final Destination franchises, and I'm a huge fan of his, and I get to work with another fabulous actor, Jimmy Drain, and I play this very mysterious and alluring muse, Cassandra, and you know, that's a really great character. I never thought I'd get to play a lady that was like mysterious and alluring, you know, after years of being in a headscarf or a burqa or any kind of hijab, you name it. This was a wonderful experience to branch into these kinds of roles. A lot of people complain about the horror genre, but I think the best roles I've had as a woman have been in the horror genre. It's not always like the slasher films of the 80s, the woman doesn't always get killed. The woman does incredible things nowadays, and I think it's a testament to great filmmakers like Dustin, like Harley.
That's kind of cool. So back to your producing thing, you have like seven producing credits. So what was the Facebook Live with Ford and Vita and Ion Entertainment? Was it stuff to get more content? Were you producing your own content? Because I noticed you directed one of the episodes as well.
You know, that was with an amazingly talented friend of mine, Ford Austin. Him and his lovely wife, Lori, moved back to Oklahoma City, and they're doing amazing things there. But that was just because we would go to support a friend of ours has a charity called Artists for Trauma, and Ford was an ambassador. And we would do interviews of people. And he's like, well, why don't we just turn this into a show, kind of to bring the name of the charity to the forefront and the sponsors to the forefront. A lot goes into events. And he decided that we should do this show, which we did. It lasted until they had to move. And I also did great shows with a lovely, lovely Donna Lee Heising, Ion Entertainment. She's a great interviewer. She's won many awards for her acting as well as her hosting. And that was just something interesting that I decided to partake. I guess that's a nod to my journalistic heritage, you know, coming from that brand.
Did you like the directing when you directed that episode, though?
I did. It was very interesting. It's interesting directing something that's a hosting segment. I would imagine it's much different directing a feature film, of course, or even a short film or anything. So it was interesting to direct. It's an interesting POV. There are so many amazing directors in this town. I would be very humbled to call myself a director.
So what do you have? Maybe not just anybody coming from another country, but anybody that wants to just get into this acting business, this crazy, crazy business in 2019 with all the Actors Access now. You just do self-taping. You don't have to go in anymore. And all these changes. What advice do you have for a young actor today?
You know, my advice now is so different than a few years ago. It's still similar in that I think you need to get a mentor. I think you need to, you know, do everything. You need to take classes. But I also agree that self-taping is huge. Everything is self-taping now. I remember recently I had to go to an audition and they're like, oh, the casting director is sick. So you're going to have to go put yourself on self-tape by the end of today. By the time I got there, it was like, I don't know, 12. LA is a very crowded place, as you can attest. So I had to go back, you know, find a place. I think the best thing an actor can do is to invest the money, purchase it on Amazon or eBay, is to get lights, to get a camera. I mean, you can't submit yourself for everything. You have to be trained. Right. You have to be ready, but just to have it as a backup. A lot of people like to go to facilities. I like to go to self-taping facilities because, let's face it, these are big auditions. How many opportunities do actors get? You don't want to look like amateur hour, you know, if you're doing yourself. Do it yourself if you're really skilled, if you have a good reader. But sometimes in the nick of time, you have no choice. You have to do it for yourself. These places book quickly. So I think it's very important to have that skill of self-taping.
That's great.
There's a great podcast called Audrey Loves Actors. And this woman does 30-day self-taping challenges where she self-tapes herself. She doesn't submit to casting. At least I don't think she does. She practices her self-taping because that's a different art form in itself. Auditioning is a different art form.
It is.
Self-taping is a different art form. And she's created, and I'm sure there's hashtags all over the internet of the self-taping challenge. So, you know, that's incredible to me that somebody can do that. And I want to do my self-taping challenge, of course, when I get all equipment together. I often self-tape myself for voiceover auditions too. For the biggies, I go into the studios and record. Otherwise, I do it from home. But I think it's what a tool we have as our artists that we can put ourselves on a tape. It could change our lives just in one tape.
I did exactly what you just said. I just did my first self-tape last week. And there's a little girl who lives below. Her name's Sophia. She's 4 years old. And you know, in Actors Access, they have a thing where you can click and do a slate.
Yeah, slate shots. They're everything now.
On about the 20th, she did it. She looked. She said, hi, my name is Sophia. I'm 4 years old. She turned. She looked. She said, bye. All in 7 seconds. So yes, it's very important. Coming up right after this is Harley Wallen. What do you have to say about him?
Oh my God. Harley is one of the most driven, talented, hardworking people I've met in my life. This guy was a champion martial artist. So, you know, I think he is used to training. He is used to working hard. He's only been making films for a couple of years, but if you look at his IMDb, look at the awards this man has won. Look at all the films he's made. He's a very, very talented fellow, and he has a great team around him. And, you know, his wife, Katie, is lovely, beautiful, equally talented. She helps cast the films. I mean, this is a very dynamic duo. These people are very talented, very hardworking, extremely humble. I think, you know, he's also a parent, which astounds me. I don't know how this man has the time to do all that he does, but he does. And he always gives 100%. So, you know, I can email him something or Joe will reach out to him and immediately he comes up with a great answer. He's very on the ball. And believe it or not, a lot of people in this industry aren't. He's a very grounded individual. Mm-hmm. It was truly an honor to work with him. I just hope there's more Harley Wallens out there making films. He does a great work, great work.
Right. Harley follows through where other people quit and don't. They get to a certain point, it's enough. Harley, he keeps going. And look at the results. It's freaking amazing. A lot of admiration for him myself. So where do people find you on the internet if they want more information about you?
Sure. You can go to my handles are all Vida Ghaffari, VIDAGHAFF like Frank, ARI.
Awesome. Hey, I know you're busy. And I know you scheduled like a month in advance just to get on this show. I appreciate you taking time out to enlighten my audience with just your talent, your knowledge. And I know that somebody listened to this and saying, wow, if she can do it, I can do it too. So thank you.
Totally. And I just want to thank you for the opportunity and thank your listeners. You're doing amazing stuff yourself. Bravo to you.
Wow. I appreciate you. And thank you so much again. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Wow. What a fantastic interview. I love interviewing her. Vida Ghaffari. So a little bit of an update. Moon of the Blood Beast. That's one of those horror movies Vida was in. It has a repeat airing this Friday, November 8th on After Hours Cinema on WGUD TV 51 at 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So check out this film she was in, External Code. It's on DVD. So it's on Amazon, Best Buy, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, Target. It's on Google Play. It's on Vudu. It's on iTunes. It's on Fandango Now. It's on Amazon VOD. It's on Vimeo. For cable providers, it's on Dish, DirecTV, Comcast Spectrum, Charter, Cox, Verizon Fios, Frontier, Suddenlink, Media.com, CenturyLink, Google Fiber, plus 200 smaller affiliates. In Canada, cable providers, Rogers, Shaw, TELUS, Bell. Wow, that's some pretty good distribution. Must be a really good movie. Look at all these other opportunities out there for you filmmakers. So Harleywood is coming up next. Yes, Harley Wallen. He's the one who actually did the movie External Code and cast Vida as the actress. So season 3 is not going to start until next year in 2020, Actors 2020 podcast. I have so many interviews that haven't been released yet, so we're going to continue on with season 2 until the end of the year, and then January 2020 season 3 begins. Don't forget to leave a review and comment. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of Actors 2020 podcast. I'm Johnny Keith, your host. Now we're going to end this episode, like we end every episode, with something called The Lesson. Because life is a bitch. Gee, really? Why don't you tell me something I don't already know? Because everywhere I go, people tell me what to do. Hey, go to church, go to school, you treat me like a fool. Now, I don't need religion, culture, or class. You don't like that fact, well, you can kiss my ass. Yeah, I'm white and I rap, you got a problem with that? Loosen up, and don't be so uptight. Take it easy, E, we got the whole night. Yes, I'm psyched, I'm ready to get the show on the road. I don't want to stop, because I just might explode. I'll tell you what, home slice, I'm twice as nice than any bad boy rapper called Vanilla Ice. My lesson, yeah, it's hip. In case you didn't know what I'm here to inform ya, I'm better than snow. I don't moonwalk or dunk like these Michael J's, but I can hold my own. You hear what I say? Now listen, learn, cause here comes the lesson. Lesson 1. Everybody sit down, JK's gonna take you for a ride uptown. Yo, this is the story of the Hollywood game. Choose your path careful, you're the only one to blame. Now when it comes to pot, crack, tweak, or blow, stick to the rules and just say no. Because you're young, you're eager, you want in the movies. Don't think you'll get there by giving up the booty, cause they'll use you, abuse you, throw you out like trash. And then you'll discover that you're out of cash. Now your heart, your soul is somewhere on the shelf, and you're walking through the streets now talking to yourself. The lesson. Well, you heard lesson 1, it's time for lesson 2. You have a choice, and the choice is up to you. I came to Hollywood to be a rich and famous star, but for now I'm waiting tables and I'm tending someone's bar. Pictures, classes, agents, where the hell does it all end? Every time I turn around,
I'm starting over again. I finally got a break with a 5 line and under. My life was starting to roar like lightning and thunder. The phone rings, hello, I'm cast in a pilot. My life spun out of control just like an LA riot. I walked off the set, said to hell with this, all man. The phone's not even ringing and my life is in the can. The lesson. Yeah, final lesson here, of course it's number 3. Now remember, I'm an actor, to be or not to be. When the going got tough, I climbed into the bottle. I'm back on my feet now, revving my throttle on the climb to the top. It's the same old games. Now I'm kicking ass and I'm taking some names. Clawing, scraping, screaming, that was a long, hard crawl. But it was all worth it, I'm a box office draw. Opportunity was there when I took it with a punch. Not now, baby, but let's do lunch. There's a big piece of pie and you should grab your portion. You can be like me, enjoying fame and fortune. Boom! That's the lesson. Go and learn it. It's the lesson. Go and learn it. It's the lesson. Peace out.
Thank you for tuning in to Actors 2020 Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Keith. Until the next episode, bye-bye.